In January 2005, the people of El Alto, Bolivia went to the streets for an indefinite strike, unless the French company Suez left their city. Within a few days, one of the largest water companies in the world packed its bags and left. I spoke to Luis Gomez on February 1st, 2005 about the events. Could you introduce yourself and tell me about the work that you do?
Okay, I'm Luis Gomez. I'm a Mexican journalist living in La Paz, Bolivia since the last 8 years almost. I've been working here mainly as a journalist inside the local media. And since the last 3 years, I've been reporting on war on drugs and democracy in Latin America for the Narco News Bulletin. I'm also a correspondent for the Mexican newspaper La Jornada. And last year, I published my first book, a large feature about El Alto in October 2003, during the last insurrection, that overthrew Sanchez de Lozada from power. And I'm right now working as an acting publisher in the Narcosville Bulletin and preparing a new book about the landless peasants movement in Bolivia.
Can you tell us what is the Pledge Nacional and where did that come about from?
Well, after the insurrection in October of 2003, the neighbors of El Alto were working a lot in their needs, their historical needs in services, public services like health and, of course, water, electricity. And during the last months of the last year, they were working in this big document which embodies the whole needs they have mainly in the last two decades. It's about 22 points demanding things like employment, like the trial against the Sanchez de Lozada, the ex-president, for the massacres in El Alto during the insurrection. And they were preparing it from the grassroots, which means every neighborhood has an assembly and decides what to put there. And, well, they finally got it in the first days of September. If I remember well, it was about September 7th. And they presented to the government of Carlos Mesa.
One of their pledges was about water. So what were the problems with Suez and the water in El Alto?
Well, the curious thing is, water wasn't a point in this Pliego Nacional. It was something that suddenly emerged within the people during the assemblies, the neighborhood assemblies, and they decided to put it in because in El Alto, Lyonnais or Suez, exactly, this water transnational from France, had a contract with the Bolivian government to provide the services of water and, cleansing and something else that haven't accomplished the task. You are talking about, what we are talking about, 50,000 families without proper services in El Alto. It has to be noted that in El Alto, 60% of the people have no proper water services in their homes. So they decide to ask because also they've been paying fees indexed to the dollar price, which means if the dollar arrives its price in Bolivia, the neighbors in El Alto have to pay more for the services. And since there were no really good services, there was no expensive policies from the transnational, and they have also to work with contamination, pollution issues, and they haven't been working in the last 7 years they've been here on this particular issue. We have very problems on rivers pollution. El Alto has about 5 rivers on it, and so they decide first to take this transnational out, and second, to redesign the water enterprise here to give it some more social profile.
When did the people decide that they wanted to have a general strike unless Suez left El Alto?
Well, they've been, I don't know, they've been struggling for about 2 months just to be heard from the government, because the government didn't give them a proper response. So, let's say about the beginning of December, last December, they finally got the installation of a dialogue about water, electricity, and so on, and the other points of the Pliego Nacional. But they didn't agree with the government about what to do. So in December 22, they decided to go in the general strike that began on January 10th.
Okay, and you were there in El Alto on January 10th, is that right?
Yes.
Can you describe the events of, let's say, that week?
Yeah, okay. Let's start a little bit earlier. When El Alto decides a general strike, and I mean every time, they always have these neighborhood assemblies first, then they gather the whole neighborhoods from a district. We have 9 districts in El Alto, and they decide every district and every neighborhood a thing we can call a war plan. So they develop a strategy, to occupy and to blockade every avenue, every street, every corner. So in January 10th, you mostly can saw every single street, every single corner, with a lot of stones on it, and about, I don't know, 20, 30 people taking care of their blockades. And in La Ceja, which is the border between El Alto and La Paz, there were about, I don't know, 5,000 people striking and demonstrating. There were, I don't know, speakers, and there were a lot of social movements came to give solidarity to the El Alto neighbors. And, well, there was almost no activity, no commercial activity. There was no traffic, of course, and no banking. And they decide only to leave the airport open. The international airport from La Paz is based on El Alto. And they decide just to leave the planes come in and out. So that day, it was very curious. Within the people, between the people demonstrating and blockading, you could see some tourists from Europe and United States, some from Japan and some other countries, walking with the bag, with the bags all over the avenues. It was mainly, I can say, it was more like a festival, because there were, yes, they were demonstrating and blockading, but they were happy because they knew from the very beginning they will win. They will win, sorry.
So what was the reasons for their victory?
Well, from a source inside the government, we knew in the very first days of the dialogue with the government last December that Suez wanted to leave El Alto because it was not really a business for them. You see, their profits were not so high, or not as high as they wanted. So, for instance, they made about $4 million last year providing the services, but they wanted to make, I don't know, about 8 or 9 million. So, since their expectations were not so good, they were trying to leave. But they were trying to leave being paid for a lot of credits they received from the World Bank, the International Monetary Fund, and some other institutions like those. But there was also a very good sign from the government. In last December, a part of not having an agreement with the neighbors in El Alto, the government asked this transnational to have a meeting to review the contract and its terms. And the officers from Suez they didn't want to do it. So by the January 10th, the government was almost decided to broke up this contract and satisfy at least this demand in El Alto. In the other hand, because of this general strike who was really big, you can say something. More than 3 days of general strike, in El Alto, would mean that La Paz, sooner or later, will have problems with oil, gasoline, and food, because the only road to came into La Paz goes from El Alto to La Paz. It's a highway, a small highway, from about, I don't know, 7 kilometers. So they were very worried to solve this thing as soon as possible, and the Altanians knew it. So they were very confident about this.
Now that Suez has gone, what happens now with the water system?
Okay, there are many, many things going on here. We have an authority who has to review the ending of this contract with Suez. And by now, they're trying to pass the whole administration of the services to a state-owned company named Samapa, in which probably the mayor of El Alto and the neighbors will have a participation, and inside the Neighborhoods Federation, there is a technical group working with them to create a new proposal for the government, which, if I remember well, will be a new enterprise with many, many people inside, with a General Assembly of Neighbors from El Alto, and will control the whole actions to take inside this new enterprise, and will be kind of social control, we call it here, which means everything will be decided inside this General Assembly, and then ordered to General Manager, which will be the main officer inside.
I'm guessing this is not the end of the story. So what happens next? I mean, what are we going to see in Bolivia in the future?
Man, this is hard to say, because we have many social movements, and they're not articulating their struggles. But in general terms, after what happened in Santa Cruz last week with this right-white movement against the government, I think this is going to be like a laboratory, you know? Everybody here, even Washington, is testing his new way of making things. So what are we going to see in the next times is more general strikes, more confrontations, because, for example, in El Alto, they have already problems with the electricity services, and these kind of services are in hands of another transnational from Spain, Iberdrola, and they don't want him here. So they're trying to reach a pacific solution, but it's not sure they're going to have it again. So in the next few months, with the Constituent Assembly and some more elections to come, I think that there's going to be a pretty nice and conflictive scenario.
Is there any final comments that you would like to add, something that was not addressed?
Well, yes. I would like to point you to El Alto again. And in my experience, since, I don't know, the last 2 years, after this mainly indigenous city, we're talking about 800 people, mostly from the Aymara ethnia, and they're very well organized, and they're a very fresh movement, and they don't have leaders or dirigents in the classic left way. They are always changing leaders. They don't need anybody in front of them to guide them. So I would like to point that we're talking about a town who works and struggles in the streets massively. And what gives, because of that, a very, very good sense of grassroots movement, an horizontal movement.
So you see this as the new form. I think Alvaro Linera said that you called it the multitude form. Is that what you're referring to?
Yes, the multitude form of policy, which is mostly, well, let's say a new political category created by Álvaro García Linera and my fellow Mexican, Raquel Gutierrez. Yes, we're talking about that. We're talking, but not really of a new form. It's an old, a very, very old Aymara way of doing things renewed in this indigenous town.
And it is an inspiration for many people all over the world that to organize this way.
Yeah, I hope this as an example, not to be copied, but to be translated, would be very, very useful for people all over the world.
Muchísimas gracias.
Y, no, muchas gracias a ti.
Buena suerte. A similar event to the one in El Alto took place in Cochabamba, Bolivia, 5 years ago, where the people forced the water company Bechtel to leave. I talked to Jim Schultz of the Democracy Center on January 31st, 2005, to reflect about the events in Cochabamba. Could you introduce yourself and the work that you do by your organization?
Sure. My name is Jim Schultz, and I'm the executive director of an organization called the Democracy Center. We're a small human rights group. We're based in Bolivia, and there are three different things that we do. We do reporting and investigation. We've especially been doing a lot of reporting and investigative work for 5 years on Bolivian globalization. We do training of advocates around the world, teaching them basically how to be more effective. And then we campaign at any given moment. When we see an opportunity, we try to organize people around the world in a citizen action campaign that we think can make a difference.
What were the reasons for the privatization of the water utilities in El Alto and Cochabamba? Was it something that was forced upon them?
Well, Bolivians didn't make a decision to privatize those two water systems. It was a decision that was imposed on them by the World Bank. Excuse me. In the mid-1990s, in the midst of a series of loans from the World Bank for water development, the bank explicitly told Bolivia that privatizing the water systems in Cochabamba and in El Alto La Paz, that those were preconditions for the loans. So, I mean, it's a little like if you're a teenager and your parents tell you that the only way you can get $5 to do something you want to do is by mowing the lawn. The pressures to mow the lawn are pretty strong. In this case, the pressures to privatize the water system. For a poor country like Bolivia, it's pretty hard to resist.
Oscar Oliveira, an important figure in the 2000 water war in Cochabamba, says that the issue is not simply private versus public. What were the water revolts about?
Well, I think the water revolts were about two different things that were similar. In Cochabamba, the water revolt was about the fact that this company came in, a big company controlled by Bechtel of California, and in a community with very poor people, and raised people's water rates by double, sometimes more, in a way that made it so that people couldn't afford water. And so I think the water revolt in Cochabamba was a rebellion. In some ways, it was just an old-fashioned consumer revolt. It was people saying, this is unacceptable. We can't pay these prices for water. And if that's who you are, you can't run a water company. I think it was really an expression of that. The El Alto water revolt, which happened just this month, January, was about something different. It wasn't so much about an increase in the rates. There had been increases in the rates there, but they were slower and they weren't as much. The real anger behind the water revolt in El Alto was the fact that there are tens of thousands of families that have essentially been left out of the water system, not by accident, but on purpose. Some of those are families in the periphery of the city that when the government and this French company, Suez, negotiated their contract, they said, all right, we're going to redline those people out. So that area of the city, that's not covered. So when those people said, well, how do we get hooked up to water? The answer was, well, too bad, the government, the company signed a contract, and that's what the contract says, and that's just how it is. And that was unacceptable. The second group of people were the people who they could theoretically get water, except that to get a hookup to your house for water and sewage cost $450. Well, you know, we're talking about a country where the minimum wage is $66 a month. I mean, imagine how people in Canada or the United States would react if they were told that to get water and sewage hooked up to their house, they'd have to spend about, you know, 7 months' salary. You just can't say that to people. And so the revolt in El Alto was really about people saying, look, access to water is a human right, and you're denying us that human right. This arrangement doesn't work. The company has to go.
So Alvaro Garcia Linera, in writing about the Cochabamba experience, says that a new form of movement has emerged, the multitude form, which contrasts the union form. Can you explain what he means by the multitude form?
Well, I'm not him, so I'm not quite sure this would be his explanation, but I can tell you what I think the difference is of this kind of organizing. In Cochabamba, the water revolt happened because there was a core group of people from respected organizations, labor groups, environmental groups, others, who looked at this, understood it, started alerting people about it, and then when the rates went up, was there to organize protest actions. But, you know, that was not a huge group of people, and they could never have had the power that they had unless the public, they understood the issue, they believed in the issue, and people were willing to take enormous risks and very serious action to demand that that Bechtel and the water company be kicked out. I mean, this is a city of close to 700,000 people that was shut down by a general strike for a week. I mean, imagine a city that size with no cars on the street. I mean, it is a complete community-wide action. And it was, in some ways, an accident. I mean, if Bechtel and Abango of Spain, the companies involved, hadn't been so greedy and raised the rates so fast and by so much, I don't think they would have provoked the kind of public reaction that they did. If the government had not been so arrogant and stupid to respond to peaceful protest by essentially declaring a state of martial law and putting police on the streets, I don't think that the people would have reacted here the way they did. So, I mean, that's how I look at the Cochabamba water revolt in terms of sort of how it got organized.
In your writing, you once, in one of your articles, you mentioned that in my neighborhood, an old woman with a bent back laid out rocks in our street to block it. So you get an idea that it's everybody was involved, that everybody was part of the mobilization. This is something that was affecting everybody.
Well, the issue affected everybody. Certainly most people affected everybody who had a hookup to water. But there was just this sense of everybody across class lines. I mean, I was down at the protest one afternoon and ran into the guy who owns the house I live in, who's an accountant at the university. I mean, it really was all over the map in terms of who supported it. And it was because a combination of there was the practical effect of people refused to have their water go up, but it was also, I think, this sense of, you know, enough's enough, you can't do this anymore. You know, it was a communication to the foreign corporations and the elite that runs this country. Look, you've crossed the line, and we're not going to allow you to cross the line. And so, for example, when the government declared a state of siege and a general strike was called, I would say within 30 minutes of word of that going out over the radio, everybody in the city knew it, and everybody started blocking roads. I mean, it was unbelievable. It was that the whole city just turned itself off together. I mean, people were coming down, knocking door to door, collecting rice and oil to cook for people from the countryside that had come in to be a part of the protests. I think that is what is happening in Bolivia at this time. I mean, it's important to remember the water revolt set in motion a whole series of revolts. The water revolt is what set in motion the politics of February of 2003, when the IMF came here and tried to impose a deficit reduction package, and people erupted in protest to say no. It was the ingredients that led to the ouster of the president in 2003 over a gas export deal. I mean, this is what's happening in Bolivia right now.
Now, it's been 5 years since the water victory in Cochabamba. How is the municipal water company SEMAPA faring in terms of efficiency and quality of services?
Well, that's a great question, and we're in the process of trying to really investigate it and put out a report in the next few months for the fifth anniversary, because people really want to know that. What I can tell you, without having investigated it sort of in terms of in depth and on documents and all of that, three things are important to know. One is the water company was returned to public hands as opposed to a private corporation. The good part of that is there's been a lot more public vigilance over how the company operates. On the other hand, for example, when it came time for the people of Cochabamba to vote to elect the board of directors for the water company, there was complete response of apathy. I think it's like 3% of the people who could have voted. And I think that's about Bolivians are sort of like everybody else. If it's urgent and in their face, people will take action. If it's about electing somebody to the public water company and you're busy doing other stuff, people don't pay as much attention. So that's been a problem. In terms of the economics of it, the water company, the public water company, when it took over, was able to roll back the rates to what they'd been before Bechtel came, and using those lower rates was able to operate the company in the black in terms of providing water to the people who were hooked up. The issue in Cochabamba, as it was the issue in El Alto, is that you have these cities that are growing with a lot of poor people on the margins, and how do you finance getting them water? You can't do it simply by taking some money out of the water rates that people are paying for the water they're getting. There's just not enough money there. So Cochabamba is struggling like most poor cities. Where are they going to get the financing to underwrite the cost of all this expansion of the water system to those who don't have it?
So what mechanisms are in place for that social participation in SEMAPA?
Well, there are, on the board of directors, which runs the company, there are certain seats that are appointed by the city government, and there are another set of seats that are designated to be elected, three seats from three different districts. The city is divided into three districts. And so one direct means of public participation is to run or to vote for people to be elected representatives of the neighborhoods. And by and large, that has meant that the door is open, that there is vigilance through that you do have a community representative, and that means that you have access to information and access to the discussions about how the company should be run.
To learn more about the work of Jim Schultz, or read his blog from Bolivia, or join his email list, visit the Democracy Center's website at www.democracyctr.org.